Caitlin, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Communicating the Connections on Climate Change and Heat Health conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. If you should need assistance during the call, please press star, then zero, and an operator will come back online to assist you. Thank you. I would now like to turn the conference over to Victoria Ludwig. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and welcome everyone to our webinar. I am Victoria Ludwig with the Local Climate and Energy Program here at EPA, and I also manage our Heat Island program. So today's webinar is going to last about an hour and a half. We have three great speakers, and they all come with various experience that relates to this topic, so it should be a great discussion. Before we begin, just a quick reminder that you can ask questions throughout the webinar in the box on the right. If you could, please indicate which speaker or speakers the question is directed to. This webcast is the first of a two-part series that we're doing this summer, focusing on the connections among climate change, the heat island effect, and public health. As temperatures rise due to climate change, the heat island effect is exacerbated, which leads to increases in heat-related illnesses, death, and other health problems. The first webcast today is going to explore how public health and environmental professionals can effectively communicate and leverage these connections to raise awareness among the public and to promote progress on the issues of climate change, heat islands, and public health. Before we begin, we're going to go over some logistics, and I will turn it to Wendy Jaglom from ICF to explain that.
Thanks, Victoria, and hi, everybody. Thanks for joining today. Just a few quick logistics about GoToWebinar. If you're hearing me, then you already know this, but audio is only available through a conference line. The information is on your screen. You can open and close your GoToWebinar control panel using that little arrow in the red box. As Victoria mentioned, we encourage you to ask questions of the speakers throughout the webcast. You are on mute. All participants are on mute, so please type in your questions into the GoToWebinar question pane and hit send to submit your questions to me. As Victoria mentioned, please indicate which speaker you would like to answer your question so that we can direct the question appropriately. At the end of the webcast, we'll have a question and answer session where I will be asking the questions that you send in throughout the webcast. So again, we encourage you to please send in any questions you have for our speakers. If you experience any technical difficulties with GoToWebinar or with the audio, please feel free to contact me, Wendy Jaglom, at wendy.jaglom@icfi.com. The address is there at the bottom of your screen. Thanks very much. Back to you, Victoria.
Thanks, Wendy. So a quick rundown of the agenda. I'm going to speak at the beginning about some resources that we have and our program that will help with communicating. Then after that, we have Connie Roser Renoff from George Mason University talking about what the public understands about the health impacts of climate change. Cirilli Patel from the American Public Health Association will speak next about how to engage your audience. Kristen Robb from the Minnesota Department of Public Health has an on-the-ground case study of what it means to prepare for heat at the state level. And then, as Wendy mentioned, we'll try to have about 15 or 20 minutes for questions. Later, in a couple of weeks, this webcast will be available on our website in the form of a podcast and the actual PowerPoint slides. So check out our website at the URL below to find that in a couple of weeks.
Do you want to mute? Oh.
Hi. I'm very sorry. There was some major feedback that came through on my phone. Very
you
sorry
found
about
a
that.
Way now.
I'm back. Okay. That was just to raise your anticipation about my presentation. So, as I mentioned, I'm with the State and Local Climate and Energy Program here at EPA, which is in the Office of Air and Radiation. What we do is we work with local governments to promote climate action at the state and local level and action on clean energy programs. A key function that we have is to provide resources to help local governments and state governments implement both climate mitigation and climate adaptation programs. Our Starship program is the Climate Showcase Communities program, which is 50 cities and tribes throughout the nation who have implemented local climate action projects and programs, and they serve as models for the rest of the country as to how to implement public transportation programs, energy, clean energy programs, recycling programs, et cetera. Out of the Climate Showcase Communities, we've developed the experience of those 50 communities. We've developed several guidance documents and tools. You can see them here. The main one I'm going to talk about is the Local Climate Action Framework, which is step-by-step guidance. It's a how-to, really, on how to plan, implement, and evaluate climate change programs. We also have documents that talk about specific sectors within the climate change action realm, and an inventory tool to help you measure your greenhouse gases, newsletter, and we work a lot with other federal programs. And, of course, we do webcasts. As well, the local climate program involves the Heat Island program, which is similar in that it works with local governments and other stakeholders to promote mitigation of the heat island effect. We have a guidebook that explains the compendium of strategies that provides case studies, implementation guidance, and also detailed explanation of the science behind the heat island effect, what it is, how it's caused, and what the impacts are. We have a website where we keep track of conferences and news stories. We have a database of local programs that you can use to see what other communities around the U.S. are doing in this area. We have webcasts, the summer series being the current one, and a newsletter. So we encourage you to go to our website and sign up for the Heat Island newsletter, which comes out roughly every 3 months. Again, we have a two-part series, and the second webcast is on August 19th. Coming up, and that will talk about how to make your communities more resilient to heat through infrastructure planning and design within the urban planning realm and the built environment realm. Here's the registration link, and we will put these PowerPoints up on our website, as I said, so that you can always double check to get that registration link later. And so we hope you'll join us for that one. So just quickly, the heat island effect is a difference in temperature between the urban areas and the surrounding areas. It's a difference in temperature at the surface and air levels. It can be different between day and night. And actually, oftentimes the difference at night is higher. In terms of magnitude between the urban area and the surrounding areas. And this is one of the main reasons that health is an issue, because people are not able to cool down at night. Small cities, medium cities, large cities all experience the heat island effect. Obviously, the magnitude of the temperature differences depend on the climate, depends on the geometry of the city. There are many complex factors that dictate exactly how much of an effect your city will have. What causes it? It's mainly because in developing our cities, we have reduced our green areas and our vegetation areas, and we've increased the amount of conventional construction materials that tend to store heat. They don't release it. They don't reflect the sun, and so they store the heat. And then on top of that, the geometry of how many cities are designed causes the heat to, as well, not be able to escape, and wind is not able to go through and help with that either. In addition to buildings, the waste heat that our air conditioning units, our cars, and even people, that our industries, the waste heat that they produce contributes to the heat island effect. The heat island effect has several negative impacts. It increases the need for air conditioning, which requires more electricity, and therefore with more electricity, you often have higher greenhouse gases coming from the fossil fuel-powered generation units. There's increased air pollution. There's more ground-level ozone formation because temperature acts as a catalyst to help that be produced. Ozone is a component of smog. It increases stormwater runoff and also increases the temperature of that stormwater, which can be a shock to the animals, fish in our waterways. Human health, which is the subject of this webinar, is a very key impact. Not only does it cause increase in respiratory problems, but it increases heat exhaustion, heat cramps, and even heat stroke. And as we've seen in several cities in the U.S. and Europe in the past 20 or so years, it has caused death because of the heat. The other aspect of heat health is that the heat island effect will exacerbate heat waves, and heat waves are what causes people to have the health effects that I just mentioned. The using data from CDC, the National Weather Service, and NOAA, it is said that extreme heat causes more deaths each year than these other weather-related incidences combined. So it is a very serious problem. Climate change models, this graph on the right is one that you can find in our EPA Climate Change Indicators report. The models project that we will see an increase in heat waves, the frequency of them, the intensity, and the duration. So this just means that we will have an increase in heat-related health problems. But we have solutions, and there are things happening around the country, as we'll hear later in the webcast. So the things that are happening are the public health and environmental communities, because they have several similar goals to protect human health, ultimately, they have worked together. They are both concerned about the impact of climate change. The public health community has been engaging heavily in climate change projects because they realize that it will cause a future impact on public health. And heat health particularly, as opposed to some of the other health-related problems caused by climate change, is a very tangible thing that we can see happening today, and it's projected to worsen. So it's a very it's a great opportunity for these two communities to work together to help raise awareness of heat health issues, but also to kind of leverage this connection between climate change and heat health to promote action on these two issues. As I mentioned earlier, a key resource that we have is our Climate Action Framework. You can see the different steps that are involved in it. And it's a step-by-step process, but it's not necessarily meant to be linear. But these are key things that we've learned from other communities that have successfully implemented programs. These are key steps that they have used in order to have a successful program. The one we're going to talk about today is the Reach Out and Communicate module or step. And This is something that helps you maximize the effectiveness of your outreach. And you can do this during the planning stage, during the implementation stage of your program, and also afterwards. These steps are organized around the six basic questions of why, who, what, when, where, and how. Again, they're not necessarily meant to be implemented in a linear way. Often they are implemented simultaneously. But communities have seen that when they do some of these or all of these, they have a much more successful program. A key thing to remember that a recommendation that we have from this experience is that if you use simple messages, you repeat them often, you get them out through multiple channels, and you have messages that come from trusted sources, your audience is much more likely to take them to heart. So here's my contact information. Don't hesitate to reach out if you have further questions. This was a very short presentation. And you can also see our websites for the Local Climate and Energy Program and the Heat Island Program. You can sign up for our newsletter there and find out information about all of our resources, including our webcasts. So we're going to get started with a before we do the next speaker question, to kind of liven up the discussion and get some input from you. So I will transfer it back to Wendy Jaglom to walk you through that question.
Great, and everybody should be able to see the poll question on your screen now. And the question is, how has your community been addressing heat health issues? Have you been addressing heat health issues mostly through public health measures, mostly through environmental planning efforts, through a combination of both public health and environmental planning efforts, through collaborative public health and environmental planning efforts, or have you not been addressing heat health issues? So I'll give everybody just a minute to share your answers. Please go ahead and select the one that applies to you. I'll give just a few more seconds. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and close the poll and share the results. It looks like the highest percentage, 29%, are not addressing heat health issues. 23% are addressing heat health issues mostly through public health measures, 23% through a combination of both public health and environmental planning, 14% through environmental planning efforts, and only 11% through collaborative public health and environmental planning efforts. So thank you very much for participating in the poll, and I'll hand it back to Victoria.
Thanks, and thanks for your responses. I think it's not surprising that the 11% have not been collaborating, because that's one of the reasons we wanted to do this webcast, is to show some tools and resources and case studies to help you learn how to do that and do it effectively, because it's not easy.